You're listening to The Watchers, a show where two women from opposite ends of New Jersey watch TV and talk incessantly about New Jersey. At least we will be today. Special guest, it's a mess. It's going to be just all Jersey.
We haven't even started talking yet. You can't say it's a mess.
I know, but it's going to be because I've been like on my Jersey brain has been lit up all morning. So
yeah, Jody's already on the warpath. Just so everybody here knows. We have our second only ever guest.
Mm-hmm.
In an act I don't know if nepotism is exactly the right word.
Part of my brain wants to call him like our podcast daddy, and that is just so wrong.
Well, don't do that.
I'll take it.
I mean, I'm like older than you, so that's a little weird, but yeah.
Well, the podcast of our podcast is the podcast that birthed, I think more specifically, he's our podcast mother.
Or godfather?
Oh, that feels more.
This is more New Jersey.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Chris Gethard's here. Hey, Geth.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to have connected you two, right? Ultimately, that's what you're referring to, is you connected through other podcasts I'm a part of. Yeah. And your other guest was Gondelman, right?
Yep.
So you only have guests who are like comedians viewed as nice with glasses?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's the vision board. It's just all friendly East Coast comedians, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Northeast comedians.
Basically.
Well, sometimes people tell me, like, people will be like, oh, Gethard's the nicest comedian. I'm like, no, you're thinking of Gondelman.
Gondelman.
You're thinking of Gondelman. I legitimately have more rage inside me. And people who know me, you don't have to scratch the surface too much to realize that.
Yeah, his niceness feels like it goes really deep.
Yeah, if Gondelman got arrested for like flipping out and flying into a rage, people would be shocked. If I got arrested for flying into a rage, people would be like, that sucks, but it tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
I think the saying is like, Jersey's kind but not nice. I think Josh Gondelman is nice and also kind.
Josh should live in the Midwest.
Which is weird because he's from Massachusetts. Like, that does not necessarily always fit, but...
Yeah, he does not fit the mess hall vibe.
Mm-hmm.
No. Although his love of Dunkin' Donuts does track.
Welcome to our Josh Gondelman podcast, everybody.
I know. So we're just going to talk about Josh for like 45 minutes to an hour.
That's fine.
Great guy.
Yes.
He was...
Great newsletter.
And very nice to say yes. I think we were just a handful of episodes into this show. And then again, you're the second person we've ever asked, mostly because Jody and I talk so much. But I think this is the best episode, I think, to have a new perspective in. We've officially watched all of the Yellow Jackets and commented on all of the Yellow Jackets that there is to watch.
And Andrea, you're the one who convinced me, because you and I work together so much and travel together so much. You convinced me that Hallie and I should watch Yellow Jackets together. So you are responsible for all of my opinions. You are I might be the podcast daddy, but you are my Yellow Jackets daddy.
Yeah, that seems right. I think that's right.
And I'm the reason that Andrea started watching Yellow Jackets. I'm the one that convinced her to watch it.
So you're my Yellow Jackets grandpa.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes. I prefer Weird Aunt, but logistically, yes.
Yeah.
So we've done season recaps before that have taken a kind of shape. We'll probably follow that generally. But I would love just to dive in first, Geth, with so you had a much more condensed experience with Yellow Jackets. I'd love to hear your just kind of general overview of what it's been like for you.
It was a real roller coaster ride, my experience with this show.
And what were you expecting going in, just based on what you'd heard me and Jody freaking out about?
Based on what I had heard about the show, which, I mean, I'd heard you two freak out, and Andrea, you'd been, you and I had some personal conversations where I picked up on it. And then also, there was a lot of chatter beyond you two, like a lot of buzz that we started to hear was really good beyond it. I would say that the overall impression, and then I might at some point ask Hallie to come up here because she has super strong opinions on it too. We both were pretty shocked pretty quickly. First of all, let me just say, there are some aspects of Yellow Jackets where I'm like, some of this is the best TV I've ever seen. Some of this is the most confusing nonsense I've ever seen, yes, too.
Totally.
Now, unfolding week to week, I can imagine that that might have been more frustrating, whereas I was able to plow through both seasons really quick and realize, like, halfway through season two, I was like, is anybody at the rudder of the ship? It's hard to tell. And my opinions on the final episode of season two are, and I have not looked up the overall fan base reaction. I don't want to step on people's toes. I don't want to piss you two off. But I would say that there were some aspects of the show that are incredible. Some performances where I'm like, first of all, just in general, great performances. The idea that you have young actors matching older actors and playing the same character, some of them nail it so hard to a degree that's like so skillful.
Yeah.
In a way that's almost impossible. Also, some actors who, and specifically actors who in by Hollywood standards would be viewed as older women now, who are known for things from a previous era, who came back and completely crushed it. Like, so much good. I will say right away, Hallie and I both were like, oh. Well, I thought this was going to be a little bit more Lord of the Flies, and it has a little bit more Blair Witch.
Yes.
And that was the first thing that Hallie flagged that was like, oh, that's not totally what I signed up for. I didn't realize it was going to have, like, these supernatural, like, carvings. They'll explain that eventually. Well, you know, and then I will say that we loved the experience of watching it. We would watch it at night, fall asleep to it, wake up, talk about it at breakfast, be psyched, like would put our son to bed and then run to the couch to be like, what's going to happen next? Yeah. But I will admit that at the end of the season two finale, my wife did turn to me and go, well, I don't need to watch any more of that show. And that was kind of the takeaway at the end of season two. I might go back just out of curiosity, but I didn't fault her for that reaction to the season two finale. I would say those are the big broad strokes.
Yeah. I think our first episode, Jody and I jumped in being like, we're not going to be critical of this show. It was after season one. We love it so much. We don't care about the criticisms. And then about 2/3 of the way through season two, we were like, all right, like there are some things.
We got to be realistic here.
Yeah.
You kind of can't not. Like some of the stuff at the end. And listen, anyone listening has had it fully spoiled is the assumption, right?
Yes.
Yep, totally.
Yes.
I will say for me, like seeing – like some scenes that are just iconic, right? Juliette Lewis sitting and waiting with the gun. Like that's like a scene that I'll never forget, right?
Yeah.
But then in the season two finale, when Elijah Wood, like when John Reynolds, who's a friend of mine, that actor's a friend of mine. Like he was on the Chris Gethard show back in the day.
Yeah.
And when, like, the other cop is in the trunk of the car and Elijah Wood just runs up and is just like, so, anyway, this didn't happen and you should just, you should just say that this would happen and then you would be a hero. And it makes, like, from the jump, there's no world. It's not even thin logic. It's,
I know.
It is a non-existent logic leap to be like, so there's a cop that's dead and you should say something else happened and then you would look good. And then little Elijah Wood just sprints off into the night and the guy never... He doesn't even react.
What do we think is going on there, either from a storytelling, there's like perspective or like how it feels like a big fumble for me.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, I think to me, they're going to try to maybe hopefully resolve that in season three and there'll be some other.
And also why set it up?
Yeah.
Because the only reason for me, I feel like it has to be resolved because it's so wild and outlandish. But then why was it so wild and outlandish? Like what's going on there?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Chris, you were saying like you haven't seen the reaction from like the sort of rabid fan base to season two, and we definitely have, and it hasn't been entirely positive. you know, there was a lot of distaste for the way they ended season two, for the death of adult Natalie, and for just sort of the chaos approach that started to happen towards the end, where things were like constantly being one-upped and like not explained. So I don't think that you and Hallie are alone in your reaction to the sort of like, I mean, second seasons are notoriously tough, but like season one was so, it hit such a note and like they had this balance going on between like the supernatural and like, is it trauma thing where they hadn't really leaned one way or the other. And it felt a lot more balanced and a lot more plausible, even though it was wild.
Season one was pretty perfect. And it also, you know, they started to play that game that you lied out of, like, maybe there was nothing going on. Maybe it was just the trauma. And it's like, but there's stuff carved on trees and there's literally a character hiding in a warm cave that, like, you can't. Like, someone someone survived that winter for months, and you have indicated it's because of a literal mystical cave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and you hate to compare it to shows that come before it, but there is a part of me that sits here and goes, God damn it, I got tricked by Lost on the same exact thing. The same exact thing. The smoke monster and the polar bear and Lost, maybe you go, what's going on? And then you sadly hit a point where you go, no one knows what's going on. And it felt similar by the end in a way that was a bummer. But that being said, I still had a really fun time watching it. Pretty much up until the last two or three episodes. Like, two or three episodes out from the end of season two, started to be like, oh man, they're not going to stick the landing on this. And then it felt like the finale they didn't was my... takeaway. So that bummed me out. But that being said, so much good, so much great Jersey reference, and so much great, like, Jersey in the acting. And even the name of the town, it's so interesting because it seems like they're in Monmouth County, but that is a very Philly suburb type.
Would love to spend the rest of the episode talking about this.
Because I was going to say it's a very Bergen County name. It's Wyckoff? Hohokus? What's going on?
Today, like, Jody said, oh, my family has roots in South Jersey. And I said,
oh, shut up. I knew you were going to bring this up.
I said, oh, where?
I used to think Newark was South Jersey.
I know. So when you said Hunterdon County, I had to say,
wait, where in Hunterdon County does your family have roots?
And it's not my family. It's one person. My family has roots in Bergen County. I just want to clarify. One person lives.
My family, my dad's side of the family has roots in Flemington. In Hunterdon County.
I think that ours is also, is Farmington a thing? It's either Flemington or Farmington. Which Farmington. I think it must be Flemington.
Flemington's the county seat of Hunterdon County.
Huh. Hold on. I have the information right here. Oh, and also my great-grandfather lived in Irvington for a while.
But I do think this is one of the things, we have a section of stuff that, and this ties in, that's like Jody and I get in the weeds about like once a week and it doesn't really matter. And probably the show doesn't actually have an answer. And I think Where is Wyckoff is a good example of that. I think they're kind of, it's a kind of amalgamation probably. But
yes.
I also think definitely Monmouth County.
Well, they specifically mention at one point that kids at that high school go and party in Homedale, right? They mentioned partying in Homedale.
I was just saying to Jody, I think Homedale or Freehold would be reasonable places.
Well, and in one of the early scenes, Teen Sean is wearing an Asbury Park t-shirt, which, I mean, you could, obviously, if you were from North Jersey, but if we remember Asbury Park in the 90s, like, I went down there one time to photograph all the abandoned buildings. Like, that was it.
It was scary. Yeah, it's like, you would not be you wouldn't be repping Asbury Park in the 90s. Now, everybody wants to lay claim to Asbury Park.
Yes.
But back then, you'd have to have some real connections to it.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
They're
exactly.
Like, I think they're definitely Monmouth County girls. But I think, Eth, what you were going to say is just the town name itself, right, leans more Southern.
That is Bergen County erasure, though.
Which I am admittedly a fan of. I am admittedly an active practitioner of Bergen County erasure.
Yes, you are.
But to me, I hear Wyckoff, right? That's the name of it?
Wyckoff,
yeah. Wyckoff is actually a town in upstate New York.
Wyckoff, I'm like, I hear that and I start to hear like Manayunk, Wissahickon, these sections of Philly. So listen, though, if the biggest problem that the show had was that it seems unlikely that a town with that name would be in Monmouth County instead of Burlington or Bergen counties, then we'd have less to talk about. But that's not the biggest problem in the show. It's just the one that the three of us are prone to like most to speak about most because we're obsessive about New Jersey.
Well, but there's bigger issues. We have other questions about locations in the present, too. Like we've talked about. So I don't know if we want to jump right into this part, Andrea, but we've talked about how
I don't know if I said this already, but just for you, Geth, and for any listeners who are maybe jumping in for the first time here, we've talked about everything. We've done our recaps. I don't think there's no like beat for beat kind of recap for this episode. We're just kind of tying up some loose ends and stuff.
Can I say something about Ty?
Yeah, absolutely. But be careful. Tread
as long
so
as it's good.
Lightly.
Never mind then.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, say it.
The character has so much good going for it, but on a fundamental level, would that person ever run for public office, let alone in New Jersey where everything is mudslinging?
I've said this, yes.
That county, state level, county, state level shit in New Jersey is all like, well, what skeletons are in your closet? Because they're coming out. Yep. And if your skeletons are that you go into a fugue state and have eaten human bodies, you probably don't run for office.
You think, unless there are two things. There are two. The show, or not the show explanation, the whatever explanation, the one that Jody and I have talked about is like, she says when she and Shauna have that sleepover and they're talking about what their dream lives would have been, and Ty's like, oh, I was going to go to blah, 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 and I was going to play this and do that. And Shauna's like, you did all of that. Like, she came home and just put her head down and was like, I'm sticking to my game plan. I'm pretending like
this never
nothing
happened. Yeah.
And I
sure. But then then you hire the person to make sure no one else spills the beans, but then that person gets killed and you kind of never acknowledge that you even knew the person in a way that does. Anyway,
the whole
political aspiration thing to me felt like there's just no way.
It's crazy.
There's just no way.
Unless she's doing it, I mean, subconsciously, because everything Ty does is subconscious at this point. Like, every choice she makes, I think, are unconscious. But do we think there's part of her that wants it all to get dredged up, even if it's a deep down part, and she knows that that's going to happen?
I mean, she's the catalyst for all of this 2021
totally.
Stuff.
Totally.
You know, her running for office is the reason, like, Jess gets hired and all of the, you know.
Well, that and Jeff's blackmail.
Well, and Jeff's blackmail. Yeah. That furniture store is just not doing well.
Not doing great.
I guess
furniturefam.com.
I might buy the subconsciously she's trying to drag it all to the surface stuff. To me, some of it just feels like writing cheats. And the other thing too, though, is, you know, if you're running for office and you're hiring somebody to see if it's going to get dredged up, maybe you want to get it dredged up, but also, like, would you ever even associate with any of these people again, let alone be like burying dead bodies with, like, at some point you'd have to go, I'm so sorry, I personally have to get the fuck out of here. There's a dead human body, you know? And again, I know,
but they're all
connected,
all seeking, and like self-destructive things. Like, they're all destroying their own lives because they haven't dealt with what they did. Like, Tawny, I keep calling her by her real name, Ty, like, she has said in a conversation with Shauna that she doesn't have it with Simone. And like, she's like, still has that sort of part of her that just wants like to blow shit up. And like they say about Shauna, like, that is just wants things to be exciting and can't settle back into. We've compared this to like veterans that come home from war and then have to go back to like, or people with like severe PTSD from battle that come back and have to like work at a desk job. And it's like, they're still have that like need for adrenaline.
And some of them go sign up to go be mercenaries in Syria. Like, and that's a real thing, and I get it. But this is one of the ones that I wonder if me being able to blaze through start to finish gives me more cynicism on a basic level. Because while you all had a week between each of these to see all this subconscious and say, okay, all the self-destruction. To me, I'm sitting here and going, well, I've already seen the season 2 finale. Mm-hmm. And I saw it in such quick succession that it's hard for me to go back and think about all this stuff and go, who's more self-destructive, the characters or someone in the writer's room? Like, who is the more self-destructive one? But I think that might honestly be the binge side of it, because I got to the end, which I think it's hard to defend. At best, I feel like people can probably watch the season 2 finale and go, because I've heard that one of the characters asked to be written off and they had to adjust around it.
We're actually not sure if we were just talking about this maybe last week that scene. Yeah. What we do know is Juliette Lewis was not happy with her character, especially going back and watching, I think, the show, what the rest of the characters got, because it is an ensemble cast in a way, but they're apart a lot, right? So she didn't get to really see how everyone else was unfolding, especially season 1. And there's a really tough interview. What was that? Where was that again,
Jody?
It
was like the panel that they did right before season 2 started. I don't remember if it was for Variety or whatever, but yeah, it was a panel that they were all on stage for.
And what were her objections?
She says, like, you know, my character, it's like a de-evolution, and she just, like, did not like where that character went, which I kind of get, especially compared to the other girls. They're so active and running around doing cool stuff and getting to interact with other people and cutting their dogs' heads off. And she's just like scooping cocaine up off the ground and being obsessed with her teen
kind of hung up on a boy from her past. Yeah.
It's really rough.
I get it.
Yeah.
Also,
she just doesn't have like a redeeming quality other than like, she's just constantly a victim. Mm-hmm. It felt like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although it's a shame because from the outside, I do think there were many moments with her in particular. I was like, this is fucking cool to see her going this hard at something again.
Oh, she's
again.
So good at it.
But from the inside, I can see how she sees what was handed to Melanie Lynskey and is like, yeah, my thing has no nuance comparatively. Mm-hmm. I could see that. Point being, though, I saw the season two finale so quick that I sit here and go, and all that political shit was bullshit, too, whereas you both spent 2 years watching it unfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the cynicism of, you know, that's a problem they're going to run into with people who binge the show moving forward, mm-hmm. is that at best about that season two finale, I think the most optimistic fan would say, okay, they didn't nail that, but hopefully they sort out a whole bunch of cool stuff that runs downhill from it. Like, that's the optimistic take.
Yeah.
And the cynical take is Hallie, who goes, I feel like I was tricked and I don't need to watch this show anymore. This show doesn't know what they don't know what they're doing with this show. Yeah. And I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. I feel like they pulled off season one. Second seasons are often like not as good because they've got all this pressure from how season one was like this big hit. Mm-hmm. They could come back. They could bring it back around and harness some of what they did with season one. It's possible. I don't know. We'll have to see. But
I think the smartest thing, I don't know what they do in 2021 to fix that last episode.
Yeah.
I think the smartest thing,
everyone goes to jail. Like,
how does it not? Well, here's something is that I keep saying, like, does the show not just end with everybody dead or in prison soon? Mm-hmm. But season or 2021, we have only seen 2 weeks of their life. We think it's hard to say exactly, but somebody like mapped everything out on a calendar on Reddit and it is 2 weeks that pass. So season three could be two friggin' days. Like, they don't need to cover a ton of time there. And I kind of think, I don't know how they handle the end of season two, unless it's with a very tight period of time where, because otherwise Melanie Lynskey is getting arrested immediately. And so is Christina Ricci. Like, I just don't know what else they can
do. She's so awesome. Christina Ricci is so funny and awesome on the show. Even when it gets pushed past the point of ridiculousness.
Oh, she's the best.
Like, I would say she's in a completely different show than everyone else, though. That's why she gets away with it.
But I mean, like, and yes, there is, when she has the private eye tied up, it's really funny and fucked up, but that's where some of the logic flaws start to happen, right? Where where she's like well aware this person's not a journalist, and then they really kind of still choose sometimes to have the characters believe that this person is a journalist, mm-hmm. even though they've said they know she, like, they, it's, that's where you start to go, wait, what's going on? Like, that's one of the storylines. But having said, she's so good. I will say too, again, so I'll also put this out here. I'm an actor. I've gotten my health insurance through the Screen Actors Guild for many years. I've read very bad reviews of myself, and I'm not in the business of criticizing other actors, especially publicly. I will say there is
privately,
an aspect of
we'll say
well, there is, there's an aspect of this show, which is that to see, and you can go down the list, right? Some of the young actors portraying the 90s versions managed to link up with the actors from 2021 versions and capture something that's not, no one's impersonating each other, but they capture like an essence to the characters that they share, mm-hmm. which is so remarkable and so difficult to do. I will also say young actors notoriously, when you are a younger person acting on screen, it can be tough, and there are notorious stories throughout the history of entertainment of young actors. You know, like, there's some young actors who bust out. Like, when you think of the kid from The Sixth Sense, whose name I'm blanking on right now. What's that?
Haley Joel Osment.
Haley Joel Osment, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, what an amazing young actor. Because it stands out so much, because we all know young actors sometimes can come off as compare that to the reaction that Jake Lloyd gets in The Phantom Menace, and you're like, oh, it can be brutal. But you can also see with the show as it goes on, like, some of the younger actors are taking this as a challenge and rising to the challenge in a way where you go, oh, they're all leveling up for the rest of their careers because of this. And it's awesome to see. Some of them don't. And that's okay. And I'm not criticizing or
Did you just say some of them are Travis?
I may have said that.
It just stands out more and more the longer that it goes on. That like they all started at a pretty similar place. Well, and some of them are getting the education of their lifetime and however this show is pulling this off. And some of them, the lessons aren't sticking as much. And some of them stand out.
It's such a, it's an example of the show overall. There's something, and listeners know, Jody and I have fierce love for this show. So I don't want this to, if Bart and Ashley ever hear this, you've never made a mistake in your life. I'm just saying this. I promise it's a lie. But
well, my disclaimer is that Pump Up the Volume is my favorite movie of all time.
Right.
And if so, I can love that much, like.
But it is like a, it's such a mixed bag. It feels to me like, I think I was talking to one of you about this. It feels to me like high school theater where it's like some of the set design is because you've got like one great artist on the crew and you've got a couple of great actors and that's incredible. And then you also have the kids who are like on the football team who are here because, you know what I mean? Like, they needed somebody who was tall enough.
They needed a tall guy.
Yeah, exactly. And it just...
But it's... I can also say as an actor, though, my guess is that they had some strategy or some acting coach matching up. Because you also have to remember, too, and I know it's very obvious, but people, you know, it's obvious to anyone. You don't have to have been on a film set to realize, but it stands out acutely to me as someone who has acted in things of those actors were never in the scenes together.
I know.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing.
Like, so whatever they did to match it, it's really remarkable. And it takes a lot of skill and a lot of work. And I almost would equate it more to like a sports experience. Like there were some people in that experience among that ensemble, especially among the crew of younger actors who like tapped in, you know, like
in a flow state.
You always see, well, you watch like college basketball where you're like, oh, they have an NBA player. They have somebody who's going to go to the NBA and everyone on the team gets better. Except guess what? There's a couple guys who probably wind up riding the bench a few more minutes a game because they are good quality players who cannot
keep up,
who they can't keep up. Right. They can't keep up. And other people, it's the tide raises everybody's skill level, but it does stand out more and more the longer the show goes on. And and again, as someone who is empathetic and has taken bad reviews on the chin, my heart goes out to some of the people in the 90s scenes because it's like, man, we got some people here straight up having mental breakdowns and eating ears and they get you there and you believe that bite of that ear.
Yeah.
When that happened, I'll never forget. Andrea, I think I texted to you. Hallie turned to me and went, she just popped it in her mouth like a fucking Pringle. Like my wife flipped out. And that young actor who plays young Shauna, right?
Yeah.
Is like
Sophie Nalise.
Yeah.
Just fucking clearly. And look, Melanie Lynskey, have you ever seen her in anything where you haven't at minimum liked her?
No.
Like minimum, when you see Melanie Lynskey. Even if it's in something that you, if she shows up in a project that's bad, you're like, well, this just got a little bit better because at least I get to watch Melanie Lynskey. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not rocket science. So young Shauna is somehow matching the bar Melanie Lynskey setting. And that's fucking awesome. And I don't know how they do that. I don't know what kind of coaching goes into that.
Because also her, like real, like the childbirth scene and the, like the grief scene over Jackie and all, they're giving her these like really, really, really hard emotional things to film, and every time she's just like, okay, and just hits it, like it's amazing
to the degree. And you just heard that I have some fucking like bow down to Melanie Lynskey tendencies.
We all do.
There are times where you watch Yellow Jackets where I would actually argue that young Shauna is the one setting the bar for the character.
Yeah,
that at times I'm sitting here going, man, Lynskey has to catch up to that. And that's, I don't think any of the others have that.
No, I don't,
but that combo, I think, sets the bar so high. And then, sometimes you see the actor who's playing Travis, who, again, no disrespect, peer-to-peer, actor-to-actor.
I've taken bad.
He's got less to do. Young Travis, literally all young Travis does is, like, say six words and then die.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, it's tougher, but you sit here and go, God damn, some of these people are somehow getting, like, I would be so fascinated to know how they got everybody on the same page between the multi-generations of actors. But some of them, it's clearly going to change how they approach the art behind what they do forever for the better. And then some people, it's like, yeah, and also you're here. And that's a lot of the ones who don't have attached adult analogs or very thin ones like Travis.
Yeah.
And you see that effect in a big way.
Yeah, I think that the ones to me that you can really feel the connection between are like teen and adult Nat also. Like,
oh, big time.
In the affectations and in sort of the way they speak. And I think I don't know if the connection is quite as strong between teen Ty and adult Ty, but it is. They're both so incredible that it's like, I don't know.
That's definitely third place, right? Like that one feels like the Shauna and Linsky one. I'm like, man, they're not impersonating each other at all. Mm-mm. And it somehow feels like one leads right to the other in a way that's wild to watch. Nat, similarly, I would even wonder. There's a part of me that now that you've told me about the panel discussion interview that Juliette Lewis gave, if there's a part of me that watches that show, if I'm Juliette Lewis going, you're giving the teenager more than you're giving me.
Yes.
And teenage Nat has so much fucking meat on its bones. Yep. No pun intended in a show with cannibalism, but like the teenage one has so many layers and so many things to deal with and so many balls to keep in the air. And I'm kind of sad because a boy died. Like, and I do coke. Like it starts to almost feel a little bit like, you know, is some of the implication in her saying that you start to have to wonder, I would imagine, is there some paranoia of like, are they playing into my reputation as an actor and a wild child of the 90s, you know, like,
because
there's a drop off. And then Ty, it feels like two very talented people circling the same thing, but slightly, that's where you start to see some slightly different takes on the character that don't match up 100%, but still really remarkable.
Yeah. Well, I think to me, teen Ty and adult Ty, like, adult Ty, I think, falls victim a little bit to what you were talking about in terms of the writing and the lack of realism in it. And so it's like,
there's some real big asks to adult Ty.
And like teen Ty is only asked to like break someone's leg and then like, you know, have a romance in the woods and try to survive. Like it's more realistic. She's like the realist in the group too. She's not the one that's like making little stick bundles and, you know, praying to tree stumps. And so I just feel like teen Ty is a more realistic write, as well as like maybe easier to play because of that.
Right. Whereas adult Ty is like, I'm running for office. Everyone's trying to figure out everything about me. Also,
I killed a dog.
I killed a dog in my own basement. And apparently I climb into a tree at night and torment my own child. And like that's a lot of scenery to chew on with all those asks, you know? And and then I'm going to randomly take a bus to the middle of nowhere. And even though it's all eyes on me all the time, like a lot of asks there. And that comes from the writing as much as anything else. You know, and again, I'm not trying to slam any people who work in the same field I do, but there's some of it too.
The Watchers is the thing that gets you canceled.
Well, no, because I'm not in the bit. You know what I mean? Like, I usually keep my fucking mouth shut about anybody's public performance on anything because I've taken it on the. Like I said, like I've taken bad reviews, but you know, outside of any writing, outside of any acting, one thing that this whole conversation is illustrative of is. I don't know if I've ever seen a show try to keep more balls in the air than Yellowjackets.
Well, and I think part of what I'm realizing as we're talking now is a lot of this is like, it feels to me that instead of giving all of these women their own sort of like flesh and fleshed out story to tell that intertwines with one another, they're telling one big story and each person has a little piece of it to fill it out. And like, so Nat is a good example of her story is one where she was a troubled teen for sure. But like Jody and I talk a lot about how she still had a lot of light and she got to be funny and complicated. And then we see what happens to a character
and
like
smart
that.
Smart and resilient. Yeah.
And then we see what happens to a character like that, where adult Nat is so hollowed out because of this one thing. But then you get to see her up against another character who has a different response and reaction to a similar circumstance. And then Ty, you know, and we see that all together to build a bigger kind of like picture of the thing. But that, you know, that kind of shortchanges those individual actors from, I can imagine, from like a personal perspective for them. So I get being frustrated for sure.
Yeah.
I would bet money that people involved with the show, especially on the writer's side, if they could go back, my guess is that there were some battles in that writer's room and that some people were going, hey, bringing back Lottie is a big reveal. And it gets that gasp, that last line, right? That's the last line of season one,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. And it's like, oh, shit. Because it does, you do start to subconsciously, you don't even really consciously vocalize it. But in season one, you're like, huh, that character is getting a lot of play compared to anybody else who doesn't have an adult version that I'm also watching. So you're kind of subtly aware of it. And then when they bring it up, you're like, oh, shit. But my guess is that there were some people in that writer's room going, I think we need a firm game plan on how Lottie gets involved, and we got to wrap a few of these things from the past up. Mm-hmm. I bet there's some people who are going, we got to explain the stick figures. We got to explain the carvings before we get, before we throw a lot, we got to figure out, let's nail down exactly what those things are so that everybody has the same reference point that's like, cause you can't have, right? Because at the end of the day, season two is like, Lottie's back and she's fucking leading a cult. And then one by one, they all just sort of go and hang out, right? Like, you could describe it as that. I'm like, wait, I thought she was the bad guy. And, you know, at the beginning of season two, you're like, okay, Lottie's the evil one that bought in on whatever the wolf heads and the carvings are. And these were all the ones that tried to stand for something against that. But Lottie is clearly the one who went nuts and led to all the fucking crazy stuff. And then pretty quickly into season two, you're like, no, they were all just kind of in it together. And we still don't know what any of that stuff is. And we still don't know who caused it. And we don't even actually know if any of that's real, let alone if anyone was behind it. And if anyone was behind it, they would theoretically be like the evil force antagonist of this whole thing. But now we're not even certain if that's real or just a result of some sort of shared psychosis.
I do think that's
the whole
as
show.
I say it out loud, I'm like, damn, man, I bet there were some people in the writer's room that were like, yo, we got to make some firmer choices, man. We're not going to get away with this too much longer.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
I mean, I do think, so I agree with you, and I do think that, but I do think that it's more interesting if there's not one big bad, that if it's actually that they're all incredibly fucked up from this experience.
For sure.
I think that, so like, I like that choice. But I think that the reason that it's gotten so frustrating is because of the first part of what you're saying, which is that they didn't answer enough or almost any of the major questions by the end of season two. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing to do the sort of complicating factor of like, we think Lottie's the big bad. We go into season two. Turns out she's just extremely like mentally ill and sad and trying to fix her life by like fixing other people's lives. That's interesting to me. I like that better than her being a villain, but we still don't know anything else. Mm-hmm. So there's like all of these unanswered questions. I have a whole
It's
list
a really brilliant show. Here's how I would say my experience with the Yellow, as we were talking it out, Yellow Jackets, here's my experience overall. Really brilliant show, incredible performances, some writing that blew my mind. Season one, you put your phone on airplane mode while you're watching Yellow Jackets.
Yeah.
Couple episodes into season two, you're like, I'll leave it on just in case anybody needs me. And the last three or four episodes, you are actively checking your phone during some of the storylines. You're definitely,
that's fair. Yeah.
If you get an update, you're like, wait, what happened? Like for me, it would be like, wait, what? Oh, there's... What game went into overtime? Oh, interesting. Like, let me just check that real quick. Like that.
Yeah.
And some of that, again, is like you're asking more questions when you haven't answered the previous questions and the lack of answers for the previous.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that I kept season one, I kept saying, like, what if this show is just like, and I love Lost. It is maybe my favorite show. I think the finale is good and I think people are wrong about a lot of it. But I think season one felt like, what if the people who made this show were like, okay, what if we made Lost but good? What if we took the stuff about Lost that people were really frustrated by, like the is it supernatural or is it just trauma, like dilemma and made it more and like fleshed it out better and were more thoughtful about those choices.
Made it proactive, made it intentional.
And then.
But, you know, when you have somebody of the caliber of Juliet Lewis turn around and you're already in production who goes, hey, I want off this show.
Yeah.
That's, first of all, we all know that's never pleasant. Mm-hmm. That's not an easy divorce, right? Like that means that something's fallen apart and there's bad feelings because you're already up and running. Mm-hmm. This didn't happen between seasons.
And she said it publicly.
Yeah.
Like, on a panel. She didn't say she wanted off the show, but she said she was unhappy with her character in season one. And she
that
said
puts
it
puts everyone else on that panel in a bad position.
It was so fucking awkward. It's like, really, it means you don't have to.
Everyone behind the scenes, producers, writers, certainly the showrunners, are just scrambling. It means there's probably some conversations that either happened beforehand that were unresolved or that should have happened way before it hit that point. So you do have to cut some slack and go, man, if one of your biggest stars partway through the season is like, you know what? I don't need the fucking money and I don't want to be here anymore. There is no way around the fact that that's just a goddamn headache. So I cut everybody slack around that. And that's not to blame her. My guess is that she probably had some points, but it also is indicative of some real communication breakdowns that certainly lead to a lot of creative scrambling. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to think of it in a behind the scenes sense, which sucks, but you got to cut people some slack on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that interview is really hard to watch because she's just like, she literally gets up and walks off the stage. It's really.
Oh, so it's like a fiasco.
Yeah.
So they try to save it. Like Tawny Cypress is trying to like joke around and make it feel like, you know, it's not as awkward and bad as it is, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It does not feel like planned at all. It feels like Juliet Lewis was like, can I just say my character was not great? Like,
I think that's literally her line. I
not
think that's
quite,
how
but
she,
it's close.
Yeah.
And it's, I have been in environments where it takes much less than that to have things start pulling apart at the seams. Mm-hmm, so it sucks to say, but who knows how much of it. And again, not trying to, Juliet Lewis has every right to stand up for herself if she feels like, you know, if things hit a point where you're out on the press tour doing the panel and you feel like you haven't been listened to and it boils over, who knows where the problem was? I'm not trying to throw her under the bus, but certainly that will give you a weird finale of your show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right,
exactly.
Well, and that panel happened obviously after they filmed season two. It was just prior to the release of it. It was advertising season two. So she knew how her end came about. And so I think that had to do with it also.
But other shows have come back from, you know, like trickier circumstances. And I think
from bad season twos.
Yeah. And I think there's still so much good that could happen in 2021. And especially what it does do is it makes me so excited for the earlier timeline. Cause I'm like, there's still like everything is still going pretty well. Back in
season two of Friday Night Lights was far worse than season two of Yellow Jackets, and then that bounced back remained an incredible show. But you know, that was one where, if you remember, they had to sort of publicly say sorry about that. We're gonna kind of ask a bunch of you guys to ignore much of season two as we move forward. Like, they publicly said that.
Wow. Yeah.
Did you guys watch that one?
I watched all of that show, but I watched it as a binge when I was like really sick, so I think that my memory of it is a little fuzzy, but I do remember hearing that about season two, about how they were like publicly
season
like,
two,
yeah, it wasn't so great.
Literally a character that's like a lovable, pretty ancillary character who gets involved in murdering someone,
that's
and they ignore it in season
that's
three.
Right.
They barely mention it.
Yes, I do
and
remember
then
that.
Hilarious.
There's also a character who has and Andrew, I'm just spoiling everything, but there is famously a character who has a catastrophic injury in season one, and the plot line for all of season two is that he goes to Mexico. A high school student in a wheelchair goes to Mexico without his parents' knowledge so that he can take part in an experimental treatment where he gets shark blood injected into his blood. I believe that is, I don't
I
think I'm misremembering
so
that.
Much of that show but out it's of like, my head, but
I'm like, we got this nice boy murdering people. We got a guy trying to inject shark blood. What the fuck is going on? And then in between season two and three, I think there was a writer's strike, and they were like, so kind of using this as an opportunity to just let you guys know, like, we hear you, and yeah, we're going to get back on track, but you're going to have to just kind of pretend that that one guy didn't murder anybody. And if I remember right, the Shark Blood character gets scooted off either into the background or off the show.
Right.
Because you're like, what can we do? He's injected shark blood into his blood.
So funny.
Like, Friday Night Lights was, I mean, Yellow Jackets.
This makes me want to watch Friday Night Lights, FYI.
You would be, I know you well enough to know you would almost, you'd be one of the people that turns around who's like, I actually think season two was the best season of Friday Night Lights. Why didn't the rest have animal blood being injected into humans? Yeah, like,
that sounds amazing.
That sounds
but
right.
Yellow Jackets season two, like,
it had some great moments. It just was uneven.
It was just that back third of the season where you started to smell a rat of like, wait, they're not going to tell us.
In those episodes, though, like, isn't I, like, well, maybe, like, Misty's Misty's musical number with Caligula?
It's like
Misty's great. We have, I mean, we've barely even talked about teenage Misty and Christina. God, like, it's incredible. The best.
I know. I mean, I think so. One of the things that made us start to do some movies after we first watched season two was moments like that with Misty, where we were like, okay, they're referencing Twin Peaks, like noticing the like 80s, 90s references within the show.
Well, and I think you immediately called out too, which is what Jody used. Yeah, he talks about a lot. It's like the Heathers, and it's so.
Yeah, it's like Misty's in Twin Peaks. I think she's also kind of in Heathers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like the black comedy part of it that she really personifies.
Serial mom, like.
But yeah, like all of those different 80s, 90s movie references are just everywhere in it.
It is. I mean, the soundtrack alone is.
So what beautiful segues. There are two things that I would love to kind of pull back and talk about before we wrap up here.
Yeah.
And one is the soundtrack and one are those references. So again, like we're talking about.
Oh, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, please. But I have to get to the 31st District and the State Senate and have this argument with Chris here so he can help.
Okay. Let's start there. And then we'll wrap up with those other two things.
So Ty.
And this is, hold on. This is one of the arguments. Like I said, there are a few things we're going to try to put to bed that we have gotten way too in the weeds
but
with.
But this
that
is
I don't
not
think
an argument
show...
that anyone is having but us.
Right. That's what
no
I
one
mean.
Else cares about this.
No, but I think the show especially doesn't care about this. And it's something you and I have been really trying to nail down. And so I think with our guest here, we air this out one more time and then we put it to bed.
Wow, Andrea's tired. Whatever this is, Andrea is done with it.
Andrea's done with a lot of things that I bring up on this show. Okay. Ty famously running for Senate. State Senate is what it's referred to. Much less important than Senate, U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But she is acting like she's running for state, for U.S. Senate in the amount of importance, advertising, like hiring private investigators, like the stakes around her political campaign don't suit a state Senate run necessarily.
The writers are confused about the difference. I think that's the issue here.
So that's the first part. But like state Senate is a small race, right? Yeah, I have a state senator. Nobody here knows who she is, but like five of us.
But as you said, it's very Jersey though to be more concerned than any other state would be about their state senator.
But also in our rewatch of season one, I caught a mention of the district that Ty is in. And so one of our constant conversations
don't say where.
Has been
don't,
like...
Don't say specifically where you think, and I won't say where I think, and we'll let Geth weigh in.
Yeah. So one of our constant conversations has been like, where are these people living now, right? We've talked about like, well, clearly Shauna didn't move too far away from home. Clearly where Ty is looks different than them. And same thing with Misty. Her house is a little smaller and weirder. And like, so we're trying to kind of place where everyone is. Anyway. Ty is running for Senate in the 31st District of New Jersey. The 31st District, State Senate District. I love how it's like already in my Google history. it covers the Hudson County municipalities of Bayonne, Kearney, and most of Jersey City. Where do we think Ty lives? Chris Gethard, where do you think Ty lives? In those three cities.
Based on the apartment she's inhabiting, that's got to be Jersey City.
Thank you very much.
Okay, but based on anything
else. No, we're done. Thanks, Chris. Okay. Anyway, moving on.
Why do we?
Andrea's insisting she's from fucking Bayonne.
I think it's Bayonne. I think
no one's from Bayonne.
There's no way house is in Bayonne. No offense.
Exactly. You guys are. Ty is the most supernatural. Like
Andrea's twisting herself into a knot trying to explain this.
I just think that if you look at Freud and the uncanny, it makes a lot of sense.
Here we go.
It's somebody like Ty who's split into two selves, where so much of what is dark and hidden and coming back to like rear its ugly head, it just makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me that she would live in like in such an like eyes on me kind of city. That's all.
She's running for state senate.
Well, there's another, I don't, and it's, I know this is something you want to put to bed, Andrea, but this does presuppose we want to get really in the weeds. Mm-hmm. She could live in Jersey City Heights, which is kind of its own weird thing unto itself within Jersey City.
Say more.
That is actually up on a cliff.
This is all I've ever wanted, is to get this specific.
Sort of separate from the rest of Jersey City, not accessible by the PATH trains. Does have a light rail.
See, I
it's
knew
atop this the Palisades.
This is why we brought you here.
Yeah. If we want to really get in the weeds, she could live in Jersey City Heights.
This, again, a place I've never even heard of. I didn't know Jersey City Heights was a place. So.
Yeah, the Heights is its own thing.
I'm looking at pictures and it does look
Jody,
possible.
It's nice when we can both be right.
I know. Well, you're not right. He's not saying Bayonne.
I'm just saying I don't think it's as clear cut as she lives in Jersey City because she should live in a city.
The other aspect of her running for state senate.
That's not why I think that.
Like
I explained further why I think she's in Jersey City. It's not just because it's a city.
It is. She
lives. It's because it's like a
fancy
gentrified hip city that got fancy in this like last 15 years.
If you were in a lesbian couple living in a place that nice amongst those three towns, it's in one of the, it's like in the Grove Street, maybe Exchange Place area of Jersey City. But it could be the Heights because you can get a nice loft up in Jersey City Heights and could be up there.
Chris, thank you so much for coming on The Watchers. It's been delightful.
The other thing about a state senate race, too, is the idea that this would be like a race that's up for grabs is also a little silly because we all know in Jersey, to become a state senator, you're just going to go get like the backroom blessing of some dirtbag Irish politician who's from some family that's run parts of Hudson County for six decades. And there's not even a real race.
Well, and they kind of try to do a version of that when she goes to that weird party. Dinner where she sees the wolf and then she tells off that lady.
Yeah.
So they have a kind of nod to that, sort of.
Yeah. That's true. Okay. Well, that's settled.
Yeah. Maybe Jersey City Heights, but not Bayonne. Not Bayonne and not Kearney. It's a debate of which neighborhood in Jersey City, but if you want to get into the metaphorical aspects, the Heights could work.
Okay.
This is the most North and South Jersey divided I feel like this podcast has ever been, and I'm loving it.
She doesn't live near Journal Square. She's not down near Journal Square, though.
No, Peronia,
Newport,
not,
Grove Street. Maybe Paulus Hook.
I was thinking Paulus
Possibly
Hook.
The Heights, yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. That all makes sense.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on.
I have... So, the first thing is... We're done talking about Yellow Jackets until season three. Although that's not true because, as I've stated, Jody, we're just going to swing right back around. We're watching right through season two again. We're going to go right back to season one. And we're just going to keep rolling through until season three premieres. But we do have plans, which I think Jody and I might talk about later and add. I'm not sure. But so we're going to have to go back to watching some movies and TV and stuff and... I know you've listened to every episode, Geth, so you know everything we've already watched.
At least twice, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, of course. But
I'm
wondering,
the godfather of the podcast.
Right. That is like a very godfather type thing, to be largely absent, but to just, you're here on our birthday to give us like $50.
Yeah.
But do you have any, like we said, Heather's, we talked about a few, but do you have any movies off the top of your head that you're like... You guys need to watch this one for sure.
As far as things that tie in.
Yeah. Or just ones that came to mind that we maybe already have watched, but just interesting to see like what ones popped out at you.
Well, I hate to go to the well on a movie that I've often publicly proclaimed as my favorite movie, but Gross Point Blank is a movie where John Cusack plays a character who's sort of eerily similar to his character from Say Anything, who becomes a professional hitman slash assassin and then returns home to go to his high school reunion.
Oh my God.
And I think you can see there is
Wait, have you not seen Gross Point Blank, Andrew?
It's like his only movie I haven't seen.
It's the fucking best movie. That's...
I haven't seen it a whole bunch of times, but I've seen it a couple of times.
I've
not
seen
in a
it
long time.
A couple dozen times. It's my favorite movie. I think it's one of the best comedies. It
feels like a shoo-in for our show when you explain it like that too.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of
it, hadn't occurred to me,
like high school, your past meeting up, your dark past and your dark present meeting up and going back to high school, there's a lot of stylistic crossover with this. And I'll also say too, I think that Gross Point Blank doesn't get enough credit, as you know, there was like the Apatow revolution of sensitive comedies, but I think Gross Point Blank was an early shot across the bow of that in a way that is also interesting in the context of what Yellow Jackets is doing as far as nostalgia and
fascinating.
Kind of like you could argue that one of the things that's really good about Yellow Jackets is it's both like bold-faced 90s nostalgia, but also in a lot of ways pointing out like, yeah, it's easy to get nostalgic, but times back then were tough and dark and the standards were different and kids had it rough. So why do we nostalgize these things? And I think there's some similar stuff there for the 80s with Gross Point Blank. Also, very similar use of soundtrack. Like two of the only projects I can think of where sometimes the soundtrack choices get an actual laugh, you know, where it's like, oh, that's such a cool, interesting, funny choice for this particular moment. So that is one that jumps out as far as some crossover themes that
that's
are great. Worth exploring.
That's interesting. I hadn't made that connection.
Let's put a pin in that one, Jody, for when we...
Oh, and please let me come back to talk about that, because I can talk about that movie for quadruple the length of the movie itself.
Well, I mean, we're gonna hold you to that. If any podcast can be 8 hours long, it's gonna be us.
When we first started this, Andrea made a promise to our listeners, which was after we did the season one recap to start the whole thing off, and it was super long and she cut it way back. She said, I promise we will never make a podcast episode longer than the TV show itself.
I lied.
And we have
never
stuck to that one time.
Not one single time. I also love a long podcast. I don't know why I like thought I would hold our show to a standard that I don't like in other shows. We'll put a pin in that. So that's also a beautiful segue for the last thing that we have to talk about, which is the show's soundtrack, which is impeccable. When we finished our rewatch of season one, Jody and I offered up our predictions for what songs we either wanted to or were expecting to hear in season two.
And I haven't revisited this. Did we get any?
We got, one of us suggested Volcano Girls by Veruca Salt, and we got Seether. That was our closest. So no, but I'd love to hear folks' predictions if you have any in mind for season three. Again, either something you'd really love to hear, even if it's unlikely, or something that it's like they're at some point we have to hear. Blah blah blah. Geth, do you want to start as our guest, or would you like to?
There's a couple that come to mind, and also feel free to let me know if they've already done these, because I'm not encyclopedic.
I have the soundtrack in front of me,
but I don't believe we've heard any Kim Deal Pixies songs yet on the show, have we? Like Gigantic, have we heard Gigantic on the show?
I don't think we've had any Pixies songs.
I feel like there was a Pixies song.
I have the list here.
It.
No, I don't think
so. See, that just feels like if you're a betting person as far as them putting forward, you know, like there's got to be a Kim Deal, whether it's the Breeders or a Pixies song that Kim Deal is singing on.
I don't think the Breeders have been on either, because they were on my short
when you
list.
Think 90, when you think 90s, female fronted rage music, like I think
doesn't it almost feel like maybe they're saving it for like the exact right moment, because it otherwise because otherwise it's an oversight at this point.
Here's another one that doesn't fit all of those, and also there's like some real bad, there's like clips of these people being like real dirtbags back in the 90s. And I hate to say it because it's a very cheesy song, and I don't think it would. But this, the music coordinators are cool enough to use it in a way that feels semi-ironic or fits perfectly. But there is a part of me that feels like I could see something very, very fucked up happening to Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers, which was just an iconic song from that period of exact time.
Hilarious that they haven't.
I thought you were going to say, when you were saying about like Bad Behavior, I thought you were going to like throw in Limp Bizkit or something.
No, there's footage of the Chili Peppers really harassing like female interviewers along the way. And you're like, oh man, they were at the end of the day, like real fucking bro-y 90s shitheads.
I saw them at Lollapalooza too in Jersey.
Brack.
Was that at Action Park? Where was that?
It was in, oh, fuck. It was south of me, so I don't remember. I looked it up recently. Lollapalooza to New Jersey. It was, I almost died on the way there. The guy that was driving us was going like 90 miles an hour. And then the traffic stopped and we had to drive off onto the median. Waterloo Village.
Oh, Waterloo Village.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is.
Waterloo Village. The fact that you view that as south of anything.
No, I know. Anything outside of Bergen County was just a foreign country to me when I was growing up. That's all.
Waterloo Village is a historical reenactment place that kind of goes out of business every few years. Then they come back and you can go see blacksmiths there and people churning butter, and then every once in a while some promoter would use it to hold a giant festival.
It's also where Wild West City is.
It's right next to Wild West City. You'll also be happy to hear.
And it's in western New Jersey. It's not southern at all. It's in Sussex County.
No, it's not. It's west Jersey. It's probably actually slightly north of Bergen County. You'll also be happy to hear that if you look up the history of Waterloo Village, when it was an abandoned town back in the 30s, it was a very, very popular, it was overrun by literal hobos who used to jump off trains because there was all these buildings and infrastructure there. So it was also like a hobo town, like an unincorporated hobo town for a long time.
Yeah.
They have used Liz Phair, right? Hole is the one that jumps out when they use the fucking was a Major Bed Now Lie in it, like Hole song. I'm like, I remember just turning to Hallie
Miss
at that
World,
and I was like,
is the Hole song, and Supernova is the Liz Phair song. Yeah,
dude, when they used the Hole song, I turned to Hallie. I was like, Hole was really fucking good, right? And Hallie was like, yeah, no shit, asshole. Like Courtney Love, the press loved to cream Courtney Love, but if you were a fucking girl who loved rock back then, yeah, guess what?
Totally.
Yeah. Hole was huge. The shit. Mm-hmm. You didn't care how much they tried to besmirch Courtney Love.
Yeah, absolutely.
All this shit where they said, they try to claim Billy Corgan wrote all those songs too. It's like, no, we got to stop figuring out ways to not like Hole as much as we should.
Yeah, like, I truly don't give a shit. Like,
I have the CD in my car at the moment.
Yeah.
Also, to be a female rock band of that era and just name yourself Hole.
It's amazing.
It's so fucking badass. Have they used the Juliana Hatfield 3 on the show? That seems like another one, right? That seems like another one they would put on this show. Matthew Sweet, the Lemonheads. Like, if you want to start talking about that whole era. Have they put Lemonheads?
Lemonheads, I don't think, have been on. Jody, do you want to share a couple of your picks?
So, I mean, I have realistic picks that would make sense given the time period, and then I have what I was listening to at the time, and those are not the same things. One of the things I had said earlier to Andrea was the fact that there's not sort of an out-of-place teen deadhead in the group is a little strange given the 90s in New Jersey, you know?
Where's your Birkenstock hacky sack?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Ultimate Frisbee was just recently invented in South Orange. You're the person trying to tell everybody about it. Yeah.
Exactly. Tie-dyed t-shirts, like carrying around a Grateful Dead stuffed bear in the car.
Who's our closest? Would that be Missy or Nat if they were going to use, like, repurpose a character?
I don't think we have one that fits that.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been Lottie. Like, if they'd retroactively made Lottie, like, a...
That kind of character.
Mystical, hippie...
Crunchy, likes crystals girl, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Always wearing a crystal. Exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
But the thing that's interesting about her, I keep saying we're wrapping up, but the thing that's interesting to me about Lottie that I didn't really realize the first time through is when you meet her in Jersey, she's dressed like a character out of Clueless. She's wearing, like, a fuzzy pink sweater and, like, a pink plaid skirt. She's not the most obvious one to become... the like representation of the wilderness. It's interesting.
But if you were going to retroactively fit that type onto one person, I feel like it would be Lottie.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The other music that I feel like is missing is punk, obviously.
Weirdly, not. They mentioned Dead Kennedys, but like that's about it.
The hold that like LA Punk and like Descendants, Bad Religion, all like, even then like Fugazi, like all of those bands had on my friend group is, mm-hmm. it was my entire high school career. Mm-hmm.
They're like, slightly later time-wise, but it's a little weird they wouldn't try to shoehorn in the Donnas maybe, because that's the crossover between that scene and this sort of feminist foot forward soundtracking.
Yeah, you
think the Donnas would show up. Jody, just inspired by you saying, like, there would be a Deadhead in North Jersey around. You can't get that many teenagers together. There's another weird thought, which is there's no way you would get that many white teenagers in New Jersey together in that exact era and not have either De La Soul or A Tribe Called Quest show up on a mixtape. Totally. It would be almost impossible.
So connected to that, around, like, sideways from that is my actual thought of what is missing right now from the soundtrack, and that's Boyz II Men. It's not Charcoal Quest and De La Soul. But there needs to be, I mean, white girls listening to, like, you know, soul, hip hop, like black music. It's that section that was the most
my best
prominent.
Friend's dad did the plumbing in Wanye's house. Big
That's
brag
very
there.
Exciting
brag.
Thank you.
I will Big say brag. This if Yellow Jackets season 3 establishes that this group of white girls from New Jersey was out specifically during the exact stretch where End of the Road was top of the charts and they
exactly.
therefore missed the cultural phenomenon, and this show retroactively
exactly.
is about what would happen if a group of white female suburban teenagers missed the End of the Road hysteria. What would that be like moving forward? And then that's used as an explanation for all of their damaged, fucked up behavior, that it's not about the cannibalism. It's about we missed the era when every white teenage girl obsessively not just sang to... I mean, this makes Let It Go by Frozen look chill, the way that white girls in my middle school and high school loved that fucking song. I'm talking singing it with tears streaming down their faces. If that's the real trauma, then I'm back on board.
That album, Coolie High Harmony, came out in 1991.
They should be 91. Obsessed.
Is that when it hit? When did End of the Road take over the charts?
So that album came out, so let's see.
92, 93, peak position number one.
Yeah, and that was when I graduated high school.
When were they still not rescued?
96.
It's right in the middle.
Oh, yeah, so that's a little
five
late.
Number one R&B hits between 92 and 97.
But they have
since
to find
sold
a
more
Donna
than 90
song.
Million albums and 50 million singles. My God.
Also, can I fundamentally say this too? Even if they don't show us who's doing the fucking carvings, at some point, I need to know how these kids made it back to New Jersey. And I'm they've just crossed the Rubicon where everyone watching is like, just show me how they got back.
I would love season, and I think it should be, if this show is a 5-season series.
Scene 1 of season 3 is them getting rescued.
It's the rescue. Yeah. And then the whole flashback season, part of the season, should be them back in New Jersey. Like
readjusting.
I kind of think because at this point, I sort of.
You're saying the jig is up on the woods.
I kind of think so. And then maybe they go back in season 4. Like
they just have to explain
no
that cave.
I think.
Also, where's the fucking coach? Where is the coach?
Oh, no. Don't.
Did I forget something? Because doesn't
no.
he end? He's, sitting,
no,
he's just sitting
just
in
Andrea
the warm cave at the end, right?
Andrea's holding on to a theory.
There's a theory from Reddit that. There's a scene at Lottie's compound where you see a guy, he's got a big beard, and you can't see his other leg. It's like in shadow or something. And so the theory is that that's Ben, that he's actually involved with Lottie's cult, and maybe he's the one. Because remember, he's the one, he like tries to burn the cabin down at the end of season 2.
He hates them all.
Yeah.
He's not at Lottie's cult.
No, he's there because he's pulling the strings.
Oh,
he's the one doing all the stuff.
He's the Magus?
He's
the one who told Elijah Wood to tell John Reynolds, go tell the cop to just roll with it.
Yep.
That is the wildest scene. That's one of the wildest scenes in the history of television, right?
Yeah.
When Elijah Wood's like, you should just go with it. Just go with it. And then you'll look good. And if not, you'll look bad. It's like, how would he look bad? You killed his partner. How does he look bad from that? What the fuck are you talking about?
None of it makes any sense. Elijah Wood, I love him so, so, so much. I think his character is really delightful
great.
And fun. if his character is just this weird little guy who's like infatuated with Misty and shows up and does like, it makes no, they've given him like him living in that huge house,
doing two puzzles at the same time, which like, I've learned is a sign of a serial killer.
They've set up so much for, but he also, that also feels like a thing they do on the show a lot. I know we're wrapping up.
Are there any defenders of that scene out there in the fan community?
I don't think so.
Not that I've heard.
It's pretty.
That like, one everybody knows.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Oh, I do want to mention that Stanhope is south of where I grew up.
Fair.
I just have to say that.
Can I also say to you?
It's the bottom of Sussex County, and I was from northern Bergen County.
Okay, so. That's fair.
But oh, northern Bergen. You were from Bergen County.
Got it.
Good to know.
I've been hearing
good things. I got to check it out. I also, too, have to say, my friend John Reynolds, one of the funniest fucking improvisers, came out of Chicago with this whole clique. And he has a great track. He played the boyfriend on Search Party, one of the cops on Stranger Things, one of the cops in this. That dude is poised.
He's in a movie I really like, too, that's he's pretty recent. So the Alien one. I forget what it's called. But
he's
it's like
incredible.
Like, yeah, he's and great.
That dude has a chance. Someone's going to put him in a role to carry the comedic weight of a thing. And people are going to go like, oh, he's the next fucking Bill Murray. Mm-hmm. He's the best. He's one of the fucking best people going to cross over from comedy into acting. He was great.
He was really funny in Search Party.
He's great. He's great. Yeah. Really, really
His
good. And a very good guy.
Is hateful, but he's really fun to watch in... Yeah. Like, he does a great job being detestable in this show.
Yes.
He's really, really good. And a great, great dude.
Oh, he was in an episode of The Sex Lives of College Girls. Huh.
So I think the, like, most obvious song to include that they haven't yet is There She Goes by The Laws, which is featured in, like, every 90s and early 2000s. Like, I just think that would be really funny. I can't believe we haven't heard Bikini Kill yet. Rebel Girl is the obvious one, but it's crazy that we haven't had any Bikini Kill at this point.
Yes.
Have they done L7?
No.
Did I pretend that we're dead?
No.
No.
That's gotta be also on
my short list.
That song, I mean, they've got
that
a lot of room.
That
song's
so good.
It's so good.
I've got that in my head all day.
And then I have one little one that is would technically be a suggestion for 2021. I brought it up at the end of season one. They still haven't done it yet. It is, do you know what I'm going to say, Jody? It is crazy that... Like, this band is such a perfect fit for bridging the 90s and 2021. And originally, I was like, they should just be in this show. Like, here's my campaign to get this band featured as they should have been the band playing in the bowling alley.
Yep.
Heartbreakingly, we can't do that anymore. But Screaming Females is such an obvious choice for 2021. Wishing Well is a song that is about Ty. I mean, it's not, but it, like... It is.
Well, if we're cracking open that conversation of bridging, that's when you start to get into your Waxahachie, Mitski, Laura Stevenson conversations.
Oh my God, there's a million that it would be so good.
The 90s affected 2010, 2020s bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think
Screamos is the most obvious one, and like being a Jersey band, but there are so many that like would crush in 2021.
Also, just some of the Screaming Females bass lines alone would just tonally fit.
Exactly. Yeah, I think tonally it makes so much sense overall. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you know what else? If we're starting to talk of things that cross over between Jersey feminism-pointed soundtracking, that's when you also have... Although they may have used it. Actually, they did use it. They used 17 by Sharon Van Etten, right?
Yes.
Yep. They did. I was going to say that would be perfect. And then that was actually because they nailed it.
That was the first song they used that wasn't from the time period in the earlier time period. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was kind of a big deal.
Yeah. That's the crossover song. I fucked that up. Edit that out.
Before we, I know we've said we're wrapping up like a whole bunch of times. I have one question left for Chris that I can't not ask. What state park? You can't pick Hackle Barney.
What? I was just about to say Hackle Barney.
What state park would you bury a body in? They already chose Hackle Barney Park.
You know Hackle Barney is my favorite state park.
I almost went there when I was home. I went to the Pine Barrens instead.
It's delightful. Hackle Barney is delightful and small and so that I will say if you two go to Hackle Barney State Park, you'll be mad at the show. It's the worst New Jersey state park you could pick.
This is why I'm asking. So what state it's park a, would you vary about in?
It's and a why small, is it not self-contained, Hackle Barney? Hackle Barney is like a very small self-contained state park that a lot of it is, it's kind of this weird gulch that you go down one side, down a big set of paths and stairways, and then all the way around the other. Like, it's a big fucking oval where for a lot of it, you can see across the whole thing. There's so many great places to hide a body in New Jersey.
Exactly.
That's, and Hackle Barney State Park, I'm sorry to say, is not one of them, although it does have a great name.
Best
and
name.
I was glad to get a Hackle Barney shout out, but I was like, you wouldn't hide a body in the Hackle Barney. You'd go, first of all, you'd go down to like Allaire State Forest or Double Trouble State Park, like one of those Pine Barrens ones. Fully, right? And if you needed to stay within spitting distance of the Monmouth County area, the Assinpink Wildlife Reserve.
I'm sorry.
Assinpink?
Say it again. Assinpink, say it slow.
Assunpink. Assinpink. Look it up. That's down near Millstone. That's right near them.
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Assinpink's right near them. What else would be? What else? I'm trying to think what else. If we know that they're close to Homedale because they've partied there.
Yeah.
Trying to think where else.
I mean, to
in
me, you
area.
Weight it down and drop it off a bridge. You don't even bury it. You just weigh it down and drop it off a bridge.
Yeah, you could also, if you even want to just stick to national parks, at that point, you could weigh it down and sink, you know, throw it off of Sandy Hook is right there. Cheesequake. Cheesequake's not far from there. That's probably where they'd bury that body, is Cheesequake.
And that's a funny enough name that, like, if they...
Such a good name.
They had to have known that a bunch of Jersey obsessives were going to get really, really in the nitty gritty, right? They must have assumed.
My guess is that they would. Here's my guess is that they said, oh, they would bury the body at Cheesequake. And they went, but that name is so weird and specific, it'll take viewers out of it. But it's a shame to lose a funny name. Let's go Hackle Barney. It's slightly less distracting, but still pretty funny.
That's probably true.
They could have gone to Pigeon Swamp State Park.
Or Turkey Swamp is right there in Freehold.
Jersey's
or Dismal Swamp.
Jersey's the best. Oh, these are all perfect.
Dismal Swamp is really
people
good.
Wouldn't
I mean, Cheesequake is in Mattawan. That's what it was. They would have gone to Cheesequake.
So glad we settled that. Geth, do you have any closing? Anything?
Mostly just thanks for having me. I hope I wasn't too much of a wet blanket or a buzzkill. I did fundamentally enjoy the experience of watching the show, but yes, being able to binge pretty quickly to the end probably does put out a little bit of the fire of obsessiveness that if I had been watching it week to week would have been right in there. I don't know if that's a bummer because it means I get to have a less pure experience, or if it's a positive because I didn't invest in a thing that has now kind of shown its own ass. But I hope I haven't been a wet blanket, and it was a joy to discuss. And I hope people realize too, like at the end of the day, much like Heather's, when you guys said you were covering Heather's, I remember being very impressed because it's similarly like, I do think people will look at this and go, man, there's so much cool shit. And so much stuff that was either outwardly or subtly different than anything else, even if it does have some major flaws. And Heather's too. Like, I remember, I don't remember that as a perfect movie, but I remember that everyone I knew growing up who also liked Heather's was someone I felt like I could fundamentally trust. You know, like, you fundamentally understand. Like, people who liked Heather's, I don't know if they were also going to like comic books or role-playing games, but they might be the punk rock, but they might also be the people who like things like John Waters or like a handful of other things in high school, you know, like a handful of things where I'm like, man, at the very least, there's going to be a fundamental understanding of like, we're going to keep each other safe because there's a certain handful of things you can be into that mark you.
Yeah,
but all of those people probably liked Heather's, you know, all of the people who liked underground shit on some level or fringe shit on some level, Heather's was a common touchstone. And I think Yellow Jackets will probably be that for a certain generation of kid. Like, is Yellow Jackets perfect? No, but if you like that, I know we might also like the same music, or we might like going to the same dorky places on the weekends or right. whatever number of things young people are doing now that reflect that fringe culture. Yeah, I bet this show will be a common touchstone for the next generation of those kids.
Mm-hmm. The people who matter recognized Arya, right?
That's right. That's right.
There you go. There you go. But the same, like The Warriors was for me. Like if I met someone else who liked the movie The Warriors, I'm like, okay, like we might not have much in common, but my guess is mentality wise, we share something. Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
This will be that, like that, Heather's, a few other things along the way.
Yeah, if I met someone that liked Pump Up the Volume as much as me, I knew they were probably bisexual.
It's exactly like that.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Yeah, thanks so much. Do you want to plug anything? You want to tell people where they can find you? Anyone listening to this probably knows where they can find
Beautiful
you.
Beautiful Anonymous. New Jersey is the world. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, all those things.
We'll link to everything in the show notes. This week's BA out also today. Speaking of reenactments, is a really fun episode on a medieval reenactor.
Oh yeah. Well, no, she's not a reenactor, she's a recreator. She made it clear that there's a difference.
That's right. I hope she doesn't hear this.
And she's not a Civil War recreator. She specifically recreates the medieval Renaissance period, but she's not Renaissance fairs. Renaissance fairs are kind of bullshit. It's a very specific take.
It's really fun. So go listen to that now that you're done listening to this. And then I would say also you can go listen to New Jersey is the World this week because I think Jody will be making a guest appearance over there as well. So it's a real...
Oh, I'm going to get my ass.
Huge mistake.
She's been so nice to you for this hour.
It's, I think, the first time we're going to talk about the great Bergen County debacle of New Jersey's
world. So just head right over there, listeners. So yeah, so we just we say goodbye to Geth. He doesn't need to be here for housekeeping. It's very fun to have another
Godfather.
Have the Godfather of the show on.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear. I'm bummed that he and Hallie felt that way about the end of the season, but I also totally understand it. Like, I think we were so invested that like we were going to find things to love about it no matter what. And I also think that his point was really solid about if you binged all of season two at once, I think that would be hard.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a slog for us, at least for me, the last couple of episodes, trying to negotiate what I wanted from the show and then also like what was actually happening. And so I think watching that all at once straight through, I would probably not have as rosy of a picture of it either.
And also not having a reason to like, because I think part of what I like about what we do is that, like, we do try to give the most generous read most of the time. And then sometimes like when I'm doing that, I end up feeling differently where I'm like, yeah. No, that does. I do feel differently now thinking about it that way.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, like we've gone so deep on all of the theories, but also into all of the choices by the actors and all of the relationships and the characters and all of that. And I think that does make it necessary to have a more sort of engaged and thorough and generous, like you said, read on the whole show.
And so, yeah, so I totally understand where they're coming from. I don't feel bad that I encouraged them so strongly to watch it because there's so many good experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way through the end of those episodes. And like, it's kind of like Geth said at the beginning, was this on Mike when we were talking about Friday? Yeah.
Friday Night Lights, yeah.
I'm kind of like, I can embrace the zany. So even the stuff that is kind of crazy that is frustrating to other people, I'm kind of like, I'm happy to roll with it.
You are famously like, a defender of Lost.
For example, like that Elijah Wood scene, totally correct. It makes no sense. It is troublesome and I don't know what they're going to do about it. And then also at the same time, I was cackling, having a great time watching it. So
yeah.
All of that can be true.
I definitely feel like there's a lot to look forward to in the future seasons that give them a chance to sort of right the ship a little, turn it slowly around. Like, not that it was going so badly, but like there are things that I wish they had answered. And
I do think maybe that's one of the big issues is that the show is so good. So then when it does make a miss, it's even more noticeable. So.
Well, because that first season was so tight, you know? So...
Yeah. So, I mean, I know we could do this
forever
and we will find other times to come back to it, but we don't have any more Yellow Jackets to talk about now.
I know. I know.
Are you excited? We know what we're going to do, and we're about to tell our listeners.
I am excited. Yeah. We've talked about this on and off for quite a while. And in that time, a podcast network I'm a big fan of decided to release something quite similar, but also opposite at the same time. And I feel very defensive about the fact that we started talking about this beforehand, but whatever. It's still a good
idea. Other shows have done similar things to
that, too. There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, no new ideas. It's just going to be our spin on this thing, and that'll be their spin. And maybe they've already started. Have they covered any of the stuff that we're going to be talking about?
That's a great question. They have
without
covered,
revealing to our listeners exactly what?
They've covered a couple, yeah. Not many and not the big one yet, okay. But they're planning on it.
Okay. It'll be interesting to pair, like listeners can have a paired experience.
Yeah, that's actually, I like that idea. That's interesting. Because I'm a big fan of that, of the podcast and that network. They did.
Yeah, you've recommended them a bunch.
Yeah. Yeah, they've only done one that we are talking about doing. Although, interestingly, one of the ones they did is Friday Night Lights.
Oh, funny.
That's why I had that in my head when Chris was talking about it and he was mentioning that second season. Okay. That explains it.
So I don't know why we were just so cryptic about what we're doing. Do you want to tell listeners what to be getting ready for?
It's a secret. No. we are going to do some pilots.
Yes.
Yellow Jackets had such a strong, incredible, epic pilot. And it made us start to think, like, what other shows have we watched that had that? And yes. And also what shows that are kind of in the same vein of things we're interested in that had that as well, whether it's from the time period or not.
Yeah, a lot of what we're going to cover are shows that we considered when we were going back and forth of like what to do next. We were like, do we pick a new show? Do we pick an old show that we've talked about? And I think it's a lot to ask of our listeners to go on a dive into a show that isn't Yellow Jackets episode for episode right now.
Maybe
at least for ones I think that aren't airing weekly, and maybe that'll change depending on how the conversations we have with each other and with our listeners about the next few episodes that we do. But we're gonna talk pilots, which is one of my favorite things to talk about. I love scene setting and figuring out how shows sort of set up what's to come and not knowing, you know, most shows when they're filming their pilots might have their first season figured out and like the arc of where things are going. But of course they don't, you know, I don't know of any examples of shows where they had every episode ready to go when they shot the pilot.
Yeah. I think that, you know, like I said, like the pilot of Yellow Jackets was so well crafted and so laid out the season in a way that was like exciting and interesting and unique in its like look and feel and all of that. So yeah, we started thinking about what are some of our other sort of canon shows, and we have some that one of us has seen and the other one hasn't, so that's going to be interesting too. Some of them are overlaps, but some of them are ones that one of us is more familiar with than the other, so that's going to be an interesting kind of dynamic to talk through.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, trying to pick shows that we know are pretty strong, I'll just say out the gate, because I think that's the other thing that's interesting is it feels to me like pilots for a very long time, we kind of excused, right? Like, be like, well, it's just the pilot. They were just setting it up. They, you know, we kind of give, like, I think of my two examples are Buffy and Dawson's Creek, which you can say what you want about those shows, but if you love those shows, it's not because of their pilots for the most part, you know? And so that's just something I'm thinking of. Are we ready to tell folks what to watch for next week?
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, like, I think it's not going to be a shock. They're not going to be blown away, knocked over, gasping for breath. What are we doing next week?
Hold on one second. Because where do we stream?
Oh, I know. I thought about that too, and I didn't look.
I think it's kind of everywhere at this point. Let's see.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like you said, big surprise. We're going to watch the pilot for Lost.
Shocking. Shocking.
I mean, even if I weren't me, it would be so silly to start a pilot season of this show on the back of Yellow Jackets and not cover Lost first.
I know. It's true.
You can watch it on Freevee, on Hulu, on Amazon Prime, on Vudu.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Apple TV. So it shouldn't be hard for you to track down. So you'll want to watch episodes 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They're just called Pilot Part 1, Part 2.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll do that. And then we have a list, but if any of our listeners have any thoughts of TV shows that they want to suggest, you know.
Totally.
We've got a good chunk to go on, but we are always open to suggestions for great TV show pilots. You know, I don't think we're going to go super far back in time, but like 80s to now, epic shows that kind of resonate with the type of vibe we have going on here, whatever the hell that is. Open to suggestion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess if you're only interested in hanging out for Yellow Jackets, we'll
see you in January.
Yeah, we'll see you in a year. But I hope you do around. If you're someone who joined us for our season 1 rewatch, you've also got a ton of movies and stuff that we talked about for quite a while. But yeah, I'm really excited to get back to TV.
I'm excited too. I feel like we are both, I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think we're both more TV than movie people. At least I know I am. I definitely have a problem sitting still for movies and therefore generally prefer TV.
In this season of my life, I am for sure more of a TV person. I've gone back and forth, but
right. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I just love stories, you know?
Yes. The human condition.
And et cetera, et cetera. So yeah. I guess there's not a whole lot to say about it.
Well, no.
Go watch Lost if you've never watched it. I can't wait for you. I hope there are people who have not watched Lost. Who think they know, who have heard all of the naysaying about the series finale and all of that, and then go in and watch this pilot and are blown away.
Well, the problem with Lost was never the pilot. The problem with Lost was the back nine. Like, you know.
Listen.
I know, you're a defender.
It's so good.
I was on board for so long with that show. Mm-hmm. Like, longer than a lot of people, I think. And I eventually was just, like, I was one of the disappointed. But doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, and I think for these shows, maybe in our reviews, recaps, whatever, for the ones that we know a lot about and really, like, spent some time with, it'll be hard not to comment on it. But I do really want the bulk of our conversations to be focused on the actual pilot episode.
Yeah, me
too.
I want
people who have never watched these shows to be able to like hang for the conversation and not worry too much about spoilers. Though for some of these shows, like,
yeah,
Lost is a hard one at this point. If you haven't had it spoiled for you by now, I'd be kind of surprised.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the first thing that'll probably come up when you Google Lost is the controversy about the ending. So
exactly. But yeah, but you should just be able to watch parts 1 and 2 and then come hang out for the conversation. Anything that jumps out at you while you're watching, shoot us an email. We're watcherspodnj@gmail.com.
Or come find us on Instagram at watcherspodnj.
Or come say hi to me at AQ Andrea Q.
Or find me at Jodi_MIM. JODIE_MIM. Why did we do it that way? We sounded very strange and weirdly rehearsed, even though that... I think we're both tired.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking into
for 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Well, 4.5 if you count our prep.
Oh, God, you're right. Wow.
It's been a long day.
That's why.
But
I hope you enjoyed our little our catch up with Chris Gethard and weren't too offended by his critiques. I think they were legit.
Yeah, totally. So.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, he told us about it here, but even just like while he was watching it, I would get texts like the plane crash and the ear. Like he was having a good time watching it too. So again, I think he's coming at it from a place of generally really liking this show.
Yeah. I wish we'd had more time to talk about all the other Jersey references, but we kept just talking and talking. So,
well, if folks want to listen to the three of us talk about New Jersey. They can head right over.
Oh no!
Over to patreon.com/newjerseyistheworld and listen to the most recent episode of South Jersey is also the world, where you'll get a little bit of a different side of Jodi. I think
I'm afraid to say anything now.
than these listeners are used to hearing from.
Yeah. I contain multitudes, I'm like an onion. Some layers are combative and some layers are hopefully thoughtful and considered.
Mm-hmm. It's a very fun episode. Go check it out.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Go outside. Get some fresh air, everyone.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Go for a walk.
We'll see you on the island.
On the island. You've been waiting to say that for so long. Oh my God, the fucking soundboard is back. Guys, I'm so sorry. We will see you next week.